Okay, today we explore the Haftorah of Parsha Shemais. I think Shemais, I didn't look through the list, is unique in that there are different customs for the Haftorah, for Ashkenaz, Sfarad, and the Taimonim. All have different customs. Now that itself is not so unique. Usually when they're different in Hagim and Haftorah, they're all from the same Sefer. They're from a Sefer, sometimes longer, shorter, different parts of a Sefer. It's very unusual. We have here the minig of Bnei Ashkenaz, which is, of course, what we're going to be doing, which is in Yeshaya, the minig of the Sfaradim, which is in Yecheskel, which is in Yirmiya, and the minig of the Taimonim, which is in Yecheskel. So that's very unusual. I don't know what the answer is. The Haftarah of Yecheskel that the Taimonim use is a very controversial Haftarah. It starts, Hayde es Yerushalayim es Tayav Seha, which is a Haftarah the Gemara mentions, that someone got an Aliyah and read this Haftarah. It starts with, Haydas Yerushalayim is Tevaseha, let Yerushalayim know it's abominations. And in those days, you could choose your own Haftarah when you got up. It had to have something to do with the Parsha, but you could choose whatever you wanted. And somebody chose that. One of the Tanaim said, if you're talking about the abominations of the Navi, of Klal of Yerushalayim, let's check your own ancestry. And they checked into him, and it turned out he was a mamzer or apostle of some sort. You know, I would think after that, no one had the guts to try it. But there is a dissenting opinion in the Gemara, which is probably what the Taimonim follow. So it could be that somehow that evolved into very, very different customs, and perhaps that's why. Be as it may, we go with the Ashkenazi custom, and that is to read Haboim Yashresh Yaakov, this Haftarah. Generally, I'd like to mention about the Navi, Yeshaya. Yeshaya, we're going to have a lot. He's the most often read book of Nach for the Haftarahs, particularly because there are seven in a row, actually eight in a row, at the Shivat and the Chemta all come from Yeshaya. And I think the three weeks, I think the third one is Yeshaya as well. I think the first one, Yirmiya, if I'm not mistaken, and the third is Yeshaya. So at any rate, it's the most often read. Yeshaya was from Shevet Yehuda, from the family of Malchus Beis David. And he was a very, I don't know the exact number of years, but it appears that he was a Navi for 80 years, maybe longer, because he started in the time of Uzziyahu HaMelech, who he describes as the king that was stricken with leprosy, and was all the way through to the time of Menashe. Menashe was the son of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu was a melech. One of the most famous stories of Yeshaya is that he comes to Chizkiyahu and he tells him, Tzav lebeisecha, ki moistamus v'chayu leisichye, you're not going to live, you're going to die. And the Gemara says that he told him that you never married. And the king answers, that's because I know b'nevuah, I'm going to have a son that's going to cause Jews to sin. And he answers him, b'hadikavshi d'rachman olam alach, this God's secrets are not your business. Gemara says, what are the secrets of God? That he's kairech neshamis of rashaim and tzadikim and rashaim. That sometimes you have a Rasha ben Tzadik or a Tzadik ben Rasha. And what you commanded to do, do. And he did it. So Chizkiyahu, the king, said to him, Ben Amoitz, Kalei Nevu Oscha Vetzei. He said, Yeshaya, leave, Kach Mekublani, Mevesavi Abba, have a Kabbalah from David HaMelech, that Filu Cherev Chadim Unachas Al Tzavari Shal Odom, Al Yim Nesatmai Min Arachanim. That you can always daven. He davened, and his life was extended. He married the daughter of Yeshaya HaNavi. Of this Navi, he said, maybe Yoskos and Maiskos together, something good will come from it. And what actually happened is that Menashe killed his grandfather. Menashe killed the Navi Yeshaya. Yeshaya was killed. The Gemara describes his attempt to hide from the king, an unsuccessful attempt. And, interesting Gemara, and ultimately this boy, who this king that was born because the Yeshaya told Chizkiyahu, he ended up killing his grandfather. So we have a minhag in Klal Yisrael, which is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that we don't name our children Yeshayahu. We give the name Yeshaya, And as it's brought in the Beis Shmuel and Shulchan Aruch, it's because Yishayahu was murdered. And we don't want to give a name after someone that was murdered, so we're Mishana the name. We give the name Yishaya. It says when you're writing a get, someone's called Shaya or Yishaya, you assume it's without the who at the end. Unless somebody chose to name son Yishayahu, being ignorant of the reason. And that's the source in Shulchan Aruch for the custom not to give names or to be Mishana, to change names of people who had a untimely death or a tragic life. And that's what it comes from. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky didn't like giving two names to children. He was very much, you should only give one name. He named Rabbi Benjamin Kamenetsky after some ancestor who had some tragedy in his life, so he changed the name. How did he change it? Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky spells his name Beis Yud Nun, Yud Mem Yud Enten Nun, instead of Beis Nun, the way Binyamin is normally spelled. Only Rabbi Yaakov could do that. You know, he changed his name. He named him Binyamin instead of Binyamin. So most of us wouldn't consider that much of a change, right? But an extra Yud, he's got an extra Yud in his name. And he's certainly, Baruch Hashem, he has every Ches Yamin. So at any rate, that comes from Yeshayahu Hanavi. And Yitzhak Hashem will discuss other aspects of Yeshaya when we have him other times. Yeshaya lived, and this has to do with the Aftira, during the time that the 10 Shvatim went to Galus, that the king of Assyria, of Ashur, came down from the north, and he was conquering the whole world. Sancherib was conquering the whole world. And when he came, he had a policy of transferring population. When you transfer population, people are less likely to rebel because they're not familiar with the place in which they're living. And he transferred the 10 Shvatim out and the Kutim in. And when he got down to Yehuda in the time of Chizkiyahu, the great miracle occurred where overnight the army, except for three people, Sancherib and his two aides, one was his son, they all died suddenly overnight. And Klal Yisrael was saved. And we read about that in Daf Torah of, I think, Parshas Metzora, right? Deshlesha Mitzrayim. That's Azriya Mitzrayim. I always get confused. But we read about it there. What? It's Mitzrayim. Okay. So Deshlesha Mitzrayim, who come into the camp and find everyone had fled. Okay. Okay, at any rate, That was Machshavah. It was the time of Doeg. Okay, I stand corrected. At any rate, let's begin the Haftarah. Haboim Yashresh Yaakov. One of the things that we find similarities between the Parsha and the Navi sometimes is that the first words are similar. Shmois begins with Haboim Mitzrayimah, and this begins Haboim, which Rashi and Yeshaya also refers to those who came to Mitzrayim. Like we have Vayetze Yaakov, the Haftarah is Vayivrach Yaakov, a similar beginning. Anyway, Haboim, and there are numerous taiches. Yeshaya is a difficult sefer. One time when we're doing Yeshaya, I want to bring in, I have a book, the book was published, I think, in the 30s, called Two Isaiahs, is the name of the book. The Bible critics say that Yeshaya was written by two different people. The style of writing in the beginning and the end is different. That's what they said in the beginning of the 20th century. Now they're saying three Isaiahs. Many years ago I gave a shiur on it, and someday we'll revisit it. But the point is that the language of Yeshaya is uniquely difficult. You can't really do it without mafarshim. Haboim Yashresh Yaakov, Yotzitzu Parach Yisrael. Haboim, those who came to Mitzrayim, Yashresh Yaakov, were rooted as Yaakov, Yotzitzu Parach Yisrael, for the purpose, when you put a seed in the ground, it sprouts. It sprouted as Yisrael, Umalu Pnei Sevel Tenuva. And it filled up the face of the earth with produce, with things that grow. Now, what is this referring to? This is referring, the Malbim says, and I saw Rav Hirsch in his commentaries, they say that when I quote Rav Hirsch on the Haftiris, it's not Rav Sham Shalfar Hirsch, it's his son. The sixth volume of the Sham Shalfar Hirsch Chumash is on the Haftiris, and that was not written by Rishon Shlomo, it was written by his son. At any rate, they translate Yashresh Yaakov. Yaakov is the name of Yaakov when he's in a lower level, and Yisrael on a higher level. So when the Jews came down to Mitzrayim, the purpose of the Golos, and that's what this first half of the Haftarah, the part we're learning tonight, has to do with the purpose of Klal Yisrael going to Golos. Yashresh Yaakov, they're rooted as an inferior or a lower level. Yatzitzu Parach, when they sprout, they become Yisrael on a higher level. Umalu Pnei Sevel Tenuva. Here, we say, and this is a common idea, that the purpose of the Golos is to make Klal Yisrael better, to make Klal Yisrael on a higher level. And there's a problem, which is a very big kasha on the whole Golos Mitzrayim. We call Golos Mitzrayim the Kor HaBarzel, the furnace that sort of purified Klal Yisrael, took out the impurities and left the pure Klal Yisrael. And there's a very basic kasha, and that is that when they went down to Mitzrayim, there were 70 tzaddikim. There were tzaddikim, there were 12 shvatim, the children, and two or three great-grandchildren, two great-grandchildren from Yehuda, and I think one from Asher. And when they left, they were in Memtei Shari Tumah. Where is the smelting furnace, the purifying of Klal Yisrael, in the Golos? It's a bit of a difficult thing to understand. The answer, which we understand, is a beautiful piece in Parsha Shavuos and the Siva Shalom, is that we understand that Klal Yisrael was not in a higher Madrega. But Klal Yisrael was in the birth stages of being a nation. When they came down, they were a family. When they came out, they were in the birth stages of being a nation, people that aspired to bigger things. That's the mashal. Here you take a seed. The seed comes out of a good fruit. You take a grapefruit and you pull out a seed. You take an apple, it's a good apple. You put it in the ground and you come back. As it's growing, it's not as good as an apple. What comes up is not edible. It's still a bud, something that's barely alive. But that's the root of what will eventually become a tree. It will become something bigger. So Klal Yisrael went down. It was not sustainable to have a nation of Avos or a nation of Shvatim. And they were planted and sprouted as a nation that would become a Klal Yisrael. Umalu Pnei Sevel Tenuva. They filled the face of the earth with this beginnings of a new people. Now, the Navi here is explaining, and the Gemara explains this, the Navi is explaining a basic idea about the Tzaras of Klal Yisrael throughout Golos. Let's read the words and I'll try to explain it. The Navi says to Klal Yisrael, Hakamakas makehu hikohu. How's that for a tongue twister? Hakamakas makehu hikohu. Is it like the infliction of those who oppose Klal Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu afflicts Klal Yisrael? In other words, the punishment that the Rabbeinu Shalom does to Klal Yisrael is in no way similar to the punishment of our enemies. How so? We'll see. Im keherig harugav hayrug? Is it like the killing of those who kill the Jews, that Jews are killed? Is it the same? Now the theme of these five or six psukim is this. The Gemara says it on Bisasa Bishalcha Terivana, on the next words. Very hard words to translate. But the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midah with Klal Yisrael is to punish Klal Yisrael if there are a small amount of Averis. And therefore, Klal Yisrael remains. Like you have a small bill in the grocery. If you keep on paying it when it's a small bill, it's manageable. If you don't pay the bill and the years go by, eventually you owe them so much money that you'll never pay the bill. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu collects from Klal Yisrael on a regular basis.
Like what the Satmar Rebbe said on Maver Rishon, right?
Maver Rishon. You mean,
Rishon is judged independently, not collectively.
Okay. Independently, not collectively. The idea that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes and takes and Klal Yisrael survives. Now with the nations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they passed from the world scene shortly after oppressing Klal Yisrael. Every great civilization passed from the world scene shortly after starting up with Klal Yisrael. So Bisasa, Asa is a measure. Mm-hmm. Bisasa with a double measure, Bishalcha, when Pare sent Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim to Rivena, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished Mitzrayim. Hoga Baruchai, HaKosha B'yayim Kadim. He, Hoga literally means to speak. Here it means sort of to blow with a strong wind, B'yayim Kadim, on the day that came from the east. Now, according to the Pshat, that this refers to Mitzrayim, it's a reference to the Kriyas Yamsuf and the destruction of Mitzrayim. To say, Kadosh Baruch Hu waited b'sa'asah till its measure was totally full, and then Kadosh Baruch Hu punished Mitzrayim and they disappeared from the scene. In this manner, the sin of Yaakov is forgiven, meaning as time goes on. Kol pri haser chatasai, and this is the fruit of the punishments of the removal of its sin. B'sumai kol avnei mizbeach, at the time of the destruction when Hashem destroyed the mizbeach, ka'avnei goyer, like stones of chalk, of worthless stones, minufotzais that are scattered, lo yakumu asherim v'chamonim. And after that, after the Churban Bayis Rishon, Klal Yisrael didn't pursue avodah zarah anymore. In other words, the Churban Bayis Rishon took place at a time that Klal Yisrael would walk away from it better. So Klal Yisrael walked away, and there was no more avodah zarah after the Churban Bayis Rishon. Klal Yisrael was never attracted to avodah zarah again. And he contrasts it. What?
Wasn't that because the Eitz Hara was killed?
So it's interesting. Rabbi Schwab here in his Pirish addresses the fact that the Navi is saying that after the Churban, there was never Avodah Zarah by Klal Yisrael, and the Gemara says that that happened 70 years later, when the Avodah Zarah, when the Eitz Hara was destroyed. So Rabbi Hirsch writes, and I'm quoting, apparently the desire to worship Avodah Zarah must still have existed even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, although its practice disappeared with the Churban. This is borne out by the fact that Chachamim tell us that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah prayed for the elimination of the desire for Avodah Zarah at the time of the return to Eretz Yisrael and the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. And the prayers were answered, the desire for Avodah Zarah was eliminated. Nevertheless, even when the desire existed, after the Churban, there was no Avodah Zarah. The Jews who were exiled to Bavel didn't have the attraction of Avodah Zarah. And it's interesting that Yeshaya, who told them to leave Avodah Zarah, is the one who says this nevuah on somebody that's still in the future. Ashur, who the great kingdom that destroyed the ten Shvatim, Nineveh was the great city. Ki'ir Bitsura is contrasting Klal Yisrael, Ki'ir Bitsura, Bodod, the great city, the fortified city of Ashur, Bodod remained an abandoned city. Nove Mishulach Venezav Kamidbar, a city that whose people were sent away and abandoned like the desert. Shamira Egel, Shamirbats Bechila Siifeha. There animals graze and yurbats and sit down, Bechila Siifeha, and eat its branches. B'yavosh Kitzira Tishavarna. And as its branches dry up, it is destroyed. Nashim Bois Me'irais Isa. Women come and they light a fire with the wood, and they destroy it. Kiloi Ambinaisu, because they're not an intelligent people. Akenya Rachmenu Aiseo V'yaitzo Elo Yechunenu. Therefore, there is no mercy to them. Now, what this refers to is, again, the Ktsas Nechoma of Jews and Galus, that the nations that oppress us disappear from the scene shortly thereafter. And that has happened throughout our history, that nations oppress us and then they're gone. Again, reading from Rabbi Schwab, as an illustration of this, I remember visiting the British Museum in London on the return leg of one of my trips to Eretz Yisrael. On display there was a copy of the famous Mesha stone. It was a famous stone which was found 100 years ago in Jordan, is now in Paris. This is an ancient Palestinian stone monument erected by a Moabite king by the name of Mesha, which documents, in a writing similar to ancient Hebrew, his great accomplishments as a king of Moab. A narrative about this king is in Melachim Bey's Perek Gimel, Pasuk Vav to Chav Zayin, telling of a war between him and the Jewish people. On this monument, he boasts about his accomplishments and writes there, among other things, quote, I defeated Omri, the king of Yisrael, and Yisrael is lost forever. That's what it says on the stone. When I read this, I turned to my brother who accompanied me and said, look at this. This king and his nation have long ago disappeared. If he were not mentioned in Tanakh, no one would even have known who he was. But we, the Jewish people, are very much alive. I just come back from Eretz Yisrael and witnessed the thriving Jewish life in Yerushalayim, B'nai Brak. We, the Jewish people, are very much alive. He says, looking at the Mesha stone is somewhat similar to coming upon a tombstone with your own name on it. Forgive me, sometimes they make mistakes, Gary. And he says, you know, like, there's my tombstone. Yisrael is gone forever, and no one knows who Mesha is except for this. And I have to tell you, the most fascinating discovery to me, in the 1990s, until the 1990s, all of the archaeologists said that King David was a legendary figure. He didn't really exist. It was a Jewish legend, and there's no proof to his existence, the fact that he ever existed. In the early 1990s, they found a stone, an inscription, that described David Melech Yisrael. And suddenly, bang, everything was upside down. In those days, we had a subscription to, it was Newsweek Time. What was the one that didn't have any dirty pictures? U.S. News and World Report. So we had a subscription to U.S. News and World Report. About, I don't remember exactly, about 5 or 6 months after the stone was discovered, they had a cover article. King David, his life, his disappointments, and they had a whole story of him. Like 6 months ago, they said he doesn't exist, he's a legend. And 6 months later, they're telling us all about him. They know everything about him from this one rock that they discovered. It's just fascinating. And you know that they find stones all over the world. They find in China and Japan. They find stones or inscriptions. They have no idea who it's referring to. And it's only stones that have biblical names that they know anything about. You know, they have hieroglyphics. They have, you go to Central Park. They have the Rosetta Stone. You look at the Rosetta Stone. It's got inscriptions. They figure out what it says, but they have no idea who wrote it, when wrote it. You know, like, they have no clue. It's only Tanakh that really lasted. So this idea is this idea that basically the punishments to Klal Yisrael, the Golus to Klal Yisrael, is what gives us our continued existence. Mashen kein du masayilam. The Gemara darshes b'yavosh ketzira tishivarna as a halachic drasha, but I've already gone over time, so I'll leave that for Thursday, Mitzvah Hashem.